Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Hotcakes, sausage patty, hash browns, scrambled eggs, biscuit, real butter and syrup. You know how our big breakfast got its name, and you know where your whole family can share one for just $6. McDonald's. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
It's just going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Our player outlooks continue. Talking Justin Jefferson today. He was the number 30 wide receiver per game in full PPR, number 41 in non-PPR last year. Chuba Hubbard went from being, a top 15 running back in 2024 to basically benched for Rico Dowdle, and then got his job back late in the year. Jared Goff, QB 15 right now in ADP. Sam Laporta, tight end 7, almost outside of the top 100 right now in Fantasy Pros ADP. Sam Laporta is going 95th overall. Chris Godwin, Rashad White, Kenneth Gainwell, the new Rashad White, and Isaiah Likely. Those are the players we're going to be talking about today. I'm Adam Azer with Heath Cummings. Hey, Heath.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, bandwagon Dan. Dan wagon.
I am Dan wagoning this bad boy. I wore this for you, Adam, because I knew you are a true Knicks fan. I'm not. I'm just someone who joins in for the fun during the playoffs, and that's okay, too. I don't have time for the NBA, in my mind, at least. But I'm happy for you. You deserve this joy. I know how big of a fan you are. I'm in the Giants group chat with you and another a co-worker, and I don't want to call him a co-worker, but it's somebody else that we know through work. And you guys talk more Knicks than Giants at times, so I'm happy for you. I am.
Why wouldn't we talk more Knicks than Giants?
Yeah, or they're a better team.
They didn't win the championship last night, just to be clear. I've already gotten congratulations.
Oh, it's over.
Both of you. It's over.
It's over.
The last three teams to win game one on the road all lost.
I know. That is the disappointing stat that's been circulating around today, but there are like 17 dozen other ones that are good in the Knicks' favor.
You know what? You want to hear a crazy stat? And we'll move on to football. If the Knicks win the finals, I saw this on CBSSports.com, an article by our Brad Botkin. If the Knicks win the finals, they will be the biggest underdog ever to win the NBA finals.
In terms of sense?
Going underdog into the NBA, their odds to win going into the finals.
Okay.
Biggest underdog ever. And their odds to win going into the playoffs was like plus 2,200 or something crazy.
Wow.
It's not, obviously it's not that now, but I don't get it. What do people think? Have you watched the last 11 games? They're obviously good enough. Come on now.
It's like the whole thing with the Patriots. They got scheduled out. People are just blaming the schedule, and then the Patriots made it all the way to the Super Bowl. So the schedule is the schedule.
It is very similar. biggest, worst odds at the beginning of the finals or at the beginning of the playoffs or at the beginning of the finals, really? Okay.
The finals doesn't make sense to me. I think they were just 2-1. That's the worst there's ever been.
That's the way
I've never been a bigger underdog than 2-1. I think it was like plus 215.
I'm going to send the article to Tom.
That one I think is fake news, but the rest of them I think is possible.
I'm going to send the article to Tom.
Imagine a 2-1 is the biggest we've ever seen.
Maybe you could. It's a pretty big underdog. All right. Anyway, the headline is Knicks aiming to become the biggest underdogs to win the NBA finals. All right.
If there's never an injury to a major star player on a team headed to the finals, I feel like that had to happen at some point.
Well, then they probably didn't win the championship, did they?
They're probably like 3-1 dogs.
I'm not saying they're the biggest underdog ever. I'm saying that if they win, they'd be the biggest underdog to win.
At the beginning of the series, like to Dan's point, when LeBron was down 3-1 to the Warriors, he was a bigger underdog than the Knicks at the start of the series.
I see what I'm in.
All right, football. Here we go. This is a weird story. Brandon Ayuk posted a video of himself speeding. Past SoFi Stadium Levi's Stadium, wherever they live in San Francisco in December. And now there's a warrant issued for his arrest for driving like a madman. He was driving way too fast.
Yeah.
Just another weird note in this saga for Brandon Ayuk.
This is what I've been trying to decide. Like, do we really think that he might matter for fantasy football again at some point?
No, I do not. Why? I think we're ever, he might be somebody because of his name that people add for a period of time, but I don't think he's going to matter as far as production and scoring goes.
He's a 28-year-old wide receiver who did not play last year, but
also did not rehab his injury with the team last year.
Yeah.
Right. Did his own rehab. I mean, he'll probably get some kind of workout to start from teams.
I think I heard something to where if the 49ers can't trade him and he's not going to show up, it actually works better for them to just keep him and put him on the exempt list and get all of his salary cap back.
Interesting. Which you know they would do. So then he misses another year. I don't know. I have him on rostered in your dynasty league, Keith. I don't know what to do about that. Thought it was a smart pick in the redraft. He was injured at the time, but that's a mess. I think I might just cut him.
Should have done that before the draft.
Okay, I knew that was going to come up, Adam.
Oh, man, I missed my. Where's my?
You told me you weren't going to bring that up ever again, Adam. You promised me.
I was trying not to.
You promised me. Take this time while it's up there to apologize.
Dan, you're coming on FFT Dynasty on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah, tomorrow. And I'm excited to talk Dynasty with you.
I can't wait. It's going to be great. I've already got the rundown built out. But we're going to have to talk about that.
Okay, we can talk about it one more second. Time.
It is
you, yes. Yeah. Okay. It's annoying when Adam keeps bringing it up when he knows he's leading me into a meltdown. And I do need to apologize because I saw so much hate from the last time I was on FFC. I apologize. Look, the bottom line is
I made a mistake.
No,
for the person who keeps saying, don't bring it up, I don't want to bring it up. Don't bring it up. You're bringing it up now.
No, I need to finalize this thing right now and say I do apologize. I was in the wrong. Net, I was in the wrong. While I don't agree with the rule, I still was in the wrong. I have to respect the rule.
We established that. Thank
I have
you.
To respect the rule.
All right, Romo Dunze, this was big news here, at least on social media. He said that the way his foot broke last year created a different type of foot structure with the bones in his foot, and that's his new normal. And then he felt like he'd still be able to make plays, but he basically said his foot is never going to be the same structurally. I don't know what to make of this, Dan.
I'm not a doctor, so I feel like I shouldn't opine too much on this. And I've never had this kind of injury. I see a lot of people on Twitter, like fantasy analysts saying, like, I've had one of these injuries. It did never heal properly. They're giving their own anecdotal evidence, which may be applicable, but probably isn't because they're not professional athletes either. And I think there's a possibility this could be a big nothing. But I can guarantee you, as we look through the next 2 months of drafting, that ADP is going to sink. It may not sink a lot, but it's going to sink to some degree with this kind of comment. We're just going to have to wait and see. Like, I think we track it through camp. We see how he's moving in camp. We see how he's feeling. We see if he's taking days off and missing time in camp for soreness or whatever it may be. And if none of that's happening, I'm pretty much going to treat this as a nothing burger.
I think he's one of the more difficult without this.
He's
one of the more difficult wide receivers to evaluate and value. Just an incredible month and a whole lot of disappointment on both sides of that.
Yep, that's right.
I could definitely see him continue to be, and we talked about this with Marvin Harrison Jr. yesterday. This is Marvin Harrison Jr.'s role with Arizona so far. He's been the end zone guy. I could see Odunze continue to make his bacon, with touchdowns. But yeah, it's definitely something we have to keep an eye on. Right now, his ADP is 56th overall. If you were drafting today, Heath, where do you think you'd take Romo Odunze?
56. So I don't think, based on this news, I'm probably going to lower him. But I had Burden 10 spots ahead of him. So I've got him 66th in my rankings, round 6 pick.
10 wide receivers ahead of him?
Yeah.
Okay. Micah Parsons, unlikely to return before October. And the Packers allowed 20.1 points per game in 14 games with Parsons. That was 8th best. 26.3 points per game in 3 games without him. That was basically 8th worst. And one of those was a week 18 game where they sat their starters but only gave up 16 points to horrible Minnesota team. And then in a playoff game against the Bears, they gave up 31 points. So their defense was definitely worse without him. And you know, Jordan Love didn't really play in the, those games except for the playoff game, but he threw, Jordan Love threw, what, 46 passes in that playoff game. So my point, I always talk about how the Packers are so run heavy.
Right.
They don't have Parsons. You know, they might throw more. Unfortunately, here are their first four games at Minnesota. Unfortunately for Jordan Love, he may not have to throw much. At Minnesota, at the Jets, Atlanta, and at Tampa Bay. Okay, next news item. The Steelers signed tight end Darnell Washington to a four-year, $42 million extension with $21 million guaranteed. I don't think he has any fantasy value, but he's an interesting player. I think he was one of the – I just wrote the team outlook. He's one of the top tight ends in yards per route run. He just doesn't get targeted that much, but he literally just runs people over. It's pretty incredible to watch this 6'7" guy. I hope they get him the ball more. Trent Williams, left tackle for the 49ers, could be playing his last season. He signed a 2-year extension, but he admitted he doesn't know how much longer his career is going to be. And George Kittle, Dan, George Kittle says he could be ready for week 1.
Yeah.
Tore his Achilles. Apparently it was, in terms of torn Achilles, it was, one that wasn't so bad in terms of the healing process. So he's trying to get back for week 1. They've already mentioned the fact that week 1 is in Australia, which is an incredibly long flight. So maybe he can't.
There's no way. Back. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's encouraging. You know, where do you think his value should be? George Kittle.
Well, we've seen a lot of these like recent lightning fast recoveries from Achilles. Daniel Jones is practicing already at Colts OTAs. I feel like he tore his Achilles 4 months ago or something in that range. It was really recent. Aaron Rodgers obviously made his comeback despite being 38 years old, pretty fast off the Achilles. So at this point, it's just not the injury it used to be. Like, I remember when you used to get the Achilles, they're like, oh, will you ever have that same quick twitch? Whatever the advancements have been made in from a medical standpoint, I feel like these athletes have come back pretty strong from it. So I'm going to treat him as if he's playing like he should be in that tight end one conversation, really outside of, for me, at least, outside of McBride and Bowers. I don't know who else I would put above him. I guess you can think about Laporta with Patzig. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I'm excited about that. Obviously, Colston Loveland has like the upside from just being potentially one of the best, if not the best, tight ends in the NFL. But from a role standpoint, from what we've seen already with Kittle, from the rapport with Purdy, he's definitely in that mix if he's playing.
Yeah, I'm going to be a lot more skeptical, partially because... Well, partially because of the age, partially because he had a career low 4.4 yards after catch per reception last year. That's been his bread and butter, is true, running after the catch. And I think he might, maybe he's healthy enough to play week 1. Doesn't necessarily mean he's as explosive as he was at what he'll be 33 in October. And then the other thing is he was really elevated by touchdowns last year and a couple of times like 2022, where the targets just aren't there, but he still scores a lot of touchdowns. And I'm afraid that Mike Evans takes a few of those.
Good point.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a stronger case from Heath, especially because we look at just something that popped in my mind when Heath made that comment or made that note. When it fell off for Kelsey as a fantasy, like number one tight end, it started with, I feel like, the yards after the catch going way down. Obviously, he was never at the level of Kittle to begin with, but like it started like that, and I feel like that might be the sign of a decline. So
right, but actually, that's funny because this came up yesterday because Kelsey did have a major drop in yards after catch.
Yeah.
He got better last year. It rebounded to 5.6. Well, I think it was in the threes the year before that. So that can bounce back. If a guy's in his prime and he has a bad yak year, that's actually a stat that I've found to be fairly predictable to bounce back. But yeah, when a guy's 30, about to be 33, as Heath mentioned, coming off a torn Achilles, I think we can be less certain about that. But I would say if he's ready for week 2, let's say he's not going to make the trip to Australia, but he's going to play week 2. Would you take Sam Laporta or George Kittle?
It's Laporta for me.
Laporta.
I'm very high on Laporta this year.
All right. Those are your news and notes. We've got that FFT Dynasty episode on CBS Sports HQ tomorrow. What time is that, Heath?
CBS Sports Network. That is 1 p.m. Eastern.
1 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports Network. So make sure you look at that. Beyond the Box Score podcast got its own YouTube channel. Search Beyond the Box Score. Obviously has its own audio feed. Great information there. We'll get our NFC player outlooks when we come back. And also people want to know, because I said he'll make his bacon with the end zone. People want to know if I eat bacon. It's a great question.
That is a great question.
The answer might surprise you when we come back on Fantasy Football Today.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Hotcakes, sausage patty, hash browns, scrambled eggs, biscuit, real butter and syrup. You know how our big breakfast got its name, and you know where your whole family can share one for just $6. McDonald's, limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
In sports, the tape never tells the whole story. Hiring is no different. AI can make candidates look like an MVP on paper, so knowing the person and the skills behind the resume really matters. That's where Robert Half changes the game. Our recruiters combine their expertise with award-winning AI to evaluate skills and fit quickly. Learn how we can find you specialized talent in finance, accounting, technology, and more. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com/talent today.
Dan, I want you to guess also. I'm going to give my guess first of what Adam's answer is going to be.
Yeah.
Then you can give yours. When I saw the bacon talk in the chat, I thought people had cameras in my house because I had a delicious bacon sandwich and the bread were egg holes. So that you had to cut the hole out of the bread and cook the egg in the bread.
Yeah.
And then bacon in between was delicious. But anyway, I think Adam's answer is yes, I eat bacon. Turkey bacon.
Oh, nasty, nasty work right there. Is the question, would you eat bacon and have you eaten bacon on occasion or do you regularly eat it?
It's
a big difference for me.
Do I regularly eat?
I've had it before and I'm not against it. Or like, is bacon something you seek? Like a bacon, egg and cheese, whatever it may be.
What do you think my relationship with bacon is?
I think you've had it and you're not against it and you're not like, there's no reason to not have it. But I think based on the things I've seen and observed from you when we've went out to dinner, I don't think you're eating any bacon because like when we went out to dinner, you had like steamed rice, chicken, dry chicken breast boiled and like, that was it, dude. And some broccoli. Like you did hold the sauce. Like, I don't know.
You're like 70% accurate. I got a chicken teriyaki bowl, which is not hell. It was like, it's fine, but it was so good. Bacon is terrific, but I usually do not eat it because I eat enough unhealthy stuff.
You don't eat anything unhealthy, dude.
Yeah, I do. I had a chicken parm pasta dish last night for dinner and a burrito for lunch.
Great. That sounds like a great day. Sounds a great day of eating. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So I eat plenty of, but bacon is where I kind of try to draw the line.
Okay.
But it's delicious. Obviously.
I love bacon.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Let's talk about Justin Jefferson. Outlook by Dan Schneier. Right now on Fantasy Pros, he's wide receiver 6. He's going 11th overall. Jefferson's being drafted just after CeeDee Lamb, just before James Cook, coming off a year where he was the number 30 wide receiver per game in PPR, number 41 per game in non-PPR. The year before that, he was, I believe, 6th per game, but very, very close to being 2nd or 3rd per game. It was a big log jam up top for Justin Jefferson. What did you kind of discover as you did your outlook on Jefferson?
Yeah, so what I thought was the most interesting about Jefferson is if we look at it right now, he's being drafted inside the top 12 receivers. I think he's either the 5th or 6th receiver off the board, depending on where you're going. So the expectation is that he's going to bounce back. And I feel like he very clearly is probably the biggest positive regression candidate in fantasy football because he scored just 2 touchdowns in 2025. He hit double-digit touchdowns in 2 of the 4 previous seasons, and he never dipped below 5 before the 2025 season. So the reality is it seems highly unlikely to me that he's going to be anything but in that potentially double-digit touchdown range. Obviously, we have to assume that there's going to be a big jump in quarterback play, but the reality is he's going to get a jump just alone from the fact that Max Brosmer will not be starting games. Like Max Brosmer played games last year for the Vikings. And in those games, there was no drop back offense to be had. So regardless of if it's McCarthy in year 2, which I don't think it's going to be, or Kyler Murray, which I think it will be, all the faults that Kyler has, there are things and aspects of playing quarterback that he still gives in my mind, a major advantage to the Vikings versus what they had all throughout last season, including the stint with Carson Wentz, which during the time with Carson Wentz, Jordan Addison benefited even more than Justin Jefferson, and Addison averaged 77 yards per game during that time. So I think Kyler comes in, leans on Justin Jefferson as the number one receiver, and there's other stats that really lead me to believe he's in line for positive regression. He averaged almost 15 yards per catch over his career, never dipped below the 14.1 yards per catch mark. Last year is at 12.5 yards per catch. Again, just really bad quarterback play that held him down throughout the entire season. I still believe from watching him on tape for Beyond the Box Score and all the work we've done, still one of the best route runners in the league, still absolutely like ability, his release off the line of scrimmage and his ability to create separation early in the route might be the best in the NFL. There's verticality to his game that just wasn't realized last year with the quarterback play. So I think more explosive plays, more deep opportunities, and just more red zone trips in general for the Vikings offense. I'm counting on it, and may be wrong about Kyler, but I really don't believe that he's this quarterback a lot of people have painted him to be. I think he's a super big upgrade over what they had last year.
There's no debate that he's a super big upgrade over what he had last year. But I'm just going to read you the Vikings passing stats in all of Justin Jefferson's seasons.
Yeah.
The first year was a 16-game season, 4,265 yards, 35 touchdowns.
Kyler's next year,
4,450, 34 touchdowns.
Kyler's never done that.
Next year, 4,818 yards, 30 touchdowns.
Kyler's never done that.
Next year, 4,700 yards. That's amazing. 30 touchdowns.
Kyler's never done that.
Two massive years in a row there. 2024, 4,300.
What are you saying over there, Heath?
Kyler's never done that.
Yeah. Kyler's never done anything really close to that, except last year, obviously, 3,208 yards and 18 touchdowns. And then Heath, it's like, well, are they throwing, is the yardage and the touchdowns so good because the quarterbacks and the system, or is it just because Justin Jefferson is, it happens to be there? You know, he's going to bounce back because he was 30th best. Where's he going to bounce back to? Is the 1-2 turn the right time for Jefferson?
It's a little bit early for me. I agree with most of the stuff Dan said. I do think there's a bounce back coming. It's just the gap was so enormous. The 4 years before last year, his 17 game pace was 113 catches for 1,681 yards and 9 touchdowns. So the gap between that and 84, 1048, and 2 is really huge. I think I've got him projected for right about 100 catches. I've got him projected for right around 1,300 yards. The thing that really concerns me is the touchdowns. Because Kyler's just never really been a high touchdown guy, 4.1% touchdown rate for his career. And a lot of that's because he just doesn't throw as much as the Vikings were in Jefferson's heyday.
Right.
Because he's going to run it 8 times a game. So I still like Jefferson as a top 12 wide receiver, but not a top 12 pick.
Okay. Yeah. Once upon a time, Kyler Murray was great for DeAndre Hopkins.
Hopkins had
seasons with him. But it just doesn't seem like that Kyler has been that player since tearing his ACL. But I mean, a change of scenery could certainly help. We've seen that happen in Minnesota for sure. All right, that's Justin Jefferson.
Just to kind of like the one great season, and he had a good half a season too, but the one great season that DeAndre Hopkins had with Kyler, it was 115 catches for 1,400 yards, but it was still 6 touchdowns.
It was very PPR scammy for sure.
Go ahead.
I do feel like regardless from what I've seen from Kyler, and he's been in some interesting offenses, like the Cliff offense is very run heavy and it's very schematically, like, I'm not saying it holds Kyler back, but it doesn't maybe take advantage of his skill set to the highest level. There's still the opportunity that Kyler could be the best version of himself with Kevin O'Connell. We've seen this with Sam Darnold. We've seen this with pretty much every quarterback who's come through that system, with Carson Wentz, even to some extent, at least this version of Carson Wentz. We know he can never be as productive as he was last year with the Vikings anywhere else. Obviously, it didn't work out for McCarthy, but we've seen that version in Kevin O'Connell. We've seen a good version of every quarterback in Kevin O'Connell's offense, with the exception of JJ McCarthy so far, and he could still take a jump potentially. And when I look at Jefferson, I feel like I'm making the same mistake I made 2 years ago if I just pass on him. Because 2 years ago, I said, I don't like Sam Darnold. I don't believe in Darnold. And I'm going to pass on Jefferson because of it. I did the same thing last year with McCarthy. But at least in Kyler's case, I've seen Kyler throw a football with some kind of accuracy and ball placement and velocity and arm talent. With McCarthy, I feel like there was just nothing there from a quarterback standpoint, from a passing standpoint. I still believe that Kyler has something in him.
Okay. There's really a lot here because, you know, the Vikings have been more run heavy the last years as their defense has gotten even better. They signed Juwan Jennings. TJ Hockenson had a 15% target per out run rate last year. I don't know what that was all about. Wow. To get more targets. There's a lot there with Jefferson. So I'll just ask you one thing. Justin Jefferson or Drake London?
London.
Jefferson for me.
All right. Next outlook is Chuba Hubbard for Heath Cummings here. He's going 68th overall on Fantasy Pros. Chuba Hubbard is RB27. This is PPR ADP. In between Bajal Tutin and Jaylen Warren, what do you want to say about Chuba Hubbard?
I just came away from writing his outlook very, very concerned that if Jonathan Brooks can stay healthy, Chuba Hubbard's not holding on to a lead rushing role. Now, maybe he bounces back as a rusher, but this was always a guy that we weren't really as sure as some of his best numbers looked. He was as good as some of his best numbers looked. Last year, he was 51st out of 52 players with 100 rush attempts in avoided tackle rate, 9.7%. He was also bottom five in yards after contact per rush attempt, fell a half a yard from 2024. Some of that could have been health because he was a little more efficient early in the year. But I kind of view him as this guy that if he holds on to the job, he's probably a low-end RB2. And if Jonathan Brooks is healthy, I don't think he's going to hold on to the job.
I have pretty low expectations for Jonathan Brooks, though.
Maybe so.
Based on what, Adam? Just the injury situation?
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off two torn ACLs, right?
Yes.
And this is not a proven back. This is a guy who really had very little feature work in college, more of a projection. So I don't know. I don't even know what kind of player Jonathan Brooks is. We've seen zero of him basically at the NFL level. So for him to come off two ACL injuries and come back, I don't know. I struggle with Chuba Hubbard. I think it's going to come down to how much they use him in the passing game. I don't think he's going to be amazing as a rusher or anything, but can he get 40 catches or something like that? Because if he does, then he's probably going to be a steal in round six or so.
Well, I think the one thought I have on this backfield is this offense took a jump last year to an extent that it could with Bryce Young as quarterback. It was because it went run heavy and it was because it committed to the run game. The run scheme diversified. And quite frankly, they were getting really good blocking from the interior of that offensive line. All three of those things came together. When we look forward to this year, I don't want to miss out completely on a run game that I think could probably pop again, to be honest, because I don't really know how you design this offense in any other way with Bryce Young at quarterback. That's partially why I'm very nervous about players like Tyrell McMillan and the receivers on that offense. That's another story for another day. So if I believe in the run game and I believe that's how they're going to look to generate offense and their defense has taken enough of a step forward, as we saw at the end of the season, to keep them in these game scripts, I have to buy into one of these two players. I think my early lean is with Brooks, though, because of the stats that Heath talked about. I think that Chuba Hubbard has kind of been trending downward, and Brooks is a projection. He's purely a projection, but he looks pretty fast so far from what I've seen. And I loved his tape. I have to go with it. I have to still view him as the prospect that he was because there's been so many players who have come back from ACLs before.
And I did see one of the injury doctors, I don't remember which one, I apologize, I always do this, on Twitter talking about how the fact that they kind of used a different procedure on the second ACL and the fact that he's had 18 months to recover from that gave them hope that he would be what he was before. Now, that's still unproven, but also Trevor Etienne's still there too. I think it's going to be a committee approach, even if Jonathan Brooks can't stay healthy.
Okay. Well, last year I was avoiding Hubbard because I kind of felt like the Panthers never really wanted to commit to him. It just kind of seemed that way. Like they drafted Brooks, then they signed Dowdle, even though they gave Hubbard a contract. But now it just depends how you feel about Jonathan Brooks. because they didn't really address the position. So maybe they have a lot of faith in Jonathan Brooks. All right, that's definitely a storyline that we're going to have to follow as we track the health of a talented running back who hasn't had his chance yet. All right, you had both Goff and Sam Laporta?
Yep.
All right, so discuss those two guys. Jared Goff right now is QB 15 in ADP, going 103rd overall in between Brock Purdy and Bo Nix. This year, I mean, it might sound bad to be QB 15 in ADP, but no, it's a really deep position, and that's a good player. And then Laporta right now is tight end 7, but 95th overall on Fantasy Pros. That's, for a guy with his potential, that's pretty good. What do you think about Goff and Laporta?
So we'll start with Goff. I think it's going to be another year, another fantasy year, another draft season where we just completely overlook Jared Goff as a fantasy community, which has been happening to a large extent, a much larger extent, I'm sure Heath can speak to, in Dynasty. It's pretty insane and absurd how it's happened in Dynasty. But in Redraft, it happens as well. Even though he is projected in the range you just went over, Adam, I won't be surprised to see him be QB 18, QB 19, like he was last year, just fell. And all the auctions I played in, he fell, and all the snakes he fell to, felt like nobody wanted to draft Goff because there's this feeling around him that his ceiling may be capped or that he doesn't rush enough. So I really don't want to take him. I can take a higher upside quarterback, whoever that may be, last year, this year. Players like Kyler might be in the mix over him. But the reality is, since 2023, do you know that Jared Goff has led all NFL quarterbacks with 101 passing TDs? Literally every quarterback in the NFL, he has the most. He's also led all quarterbacks with 13,768 passing yards. The most passing yards per game at 270. The most 300-yard passing games is Jared Goff with 17. Explosive gains of 20 or more yards. Jared Goff with 196. Like, we're talking about one of the most explosive passers in the NFL, one of the most consistent passers in the NFL from a yard standpoint, and the highest scoring touchdown passer in the NFL.
What's the time? Was it the last 3 years?
Since 2023, yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to run his fantasy points and see where he ranks there.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's kind of interesting, right? I mean, he's been the most prolific passer in football over the last 3 years.
I'm gonna guess he's ninth. Seems like he's always ninth.
He's eighth. Eighth points per game.
And now that's where he is in my projections. What did you say? QB 15?
Yeah, 15. Six, right now is 16.
It just feels like stealing almost in that sense. Unless you perceive that he's going to take this big drop off in his play, which doesn't seem likely to me. If he's going to take a big drop, if that offensive scheme is going to take a, or that offense in general is going to take a big drop off, doubt that because they lost Ben Johnson. I wrote this up in the Outlook, but they lost Ben Johnson and he still put together his fourth straight 4,000 yard passing season without Ben Johnson there. I think Isaac Tesla takes a jump forward. They could potentially be even better at the skill spots. Also, in addition to that, Laporta will be healthier this year. And they added to the offensive line, an area that was still great last year, but took a smaller step back. But they're trying to rebuild that up to a certain level. So I really think there's just no risk in this profile. And he's just not being priced at the point he should be.
Heath, you feel that way?
100%. He's being drafted at his floor. I think like you had a note in there about how for the second year in a row, they threw a lot more in the second half of the season than they did in the first. But the first seven games when they weren't throwing as much, he was QB 14. Like if things go bad, he might only be worth what his current ADP is.
Right. So it's okay. Right. My concern with Goff and with Laporta, not so much St. Brown, is their defense 2 years in a row has been pretty good on paper and pretty good in general, and then has fallen apart and they've had to throw a lot more. But we know Dan Campbell wants to be a running team now. They don't have Montgomery anymore. I don't think they're going to give Pacheco like 150 carries or anything. It's really a minor concern. Forget that. Just forget about the pass attempts. Let me just say this. Yes, you're right that being drafted at QB 15 or 16 is the floor for Goff. However, he is going 108th overall. And I look at Matthew Golden, Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah, we can't do that.
If you no, I do that. Casey Concepcion. I don't know, Thomas, if you can scroll down and look at some other guys in the range. Kyle Pitts is in this range. Wandale Robinson, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, George Kittle right now, Aaron Jones. I just wouldn't take Goff. Where he's going as a quarterback makes sense to me, or it's a great value, but I still think it's too high in the draft. I'm not using my ninth round pick on Jared Goff. To me,
all played in enough snakes, Adam, to know that this quarterback drafting is so dependent on your league.
Okay, fine. That's sure. I'm just saying I'm using a double digit round pick on Jared. Okay. because you can get similar players later.
If you're right, you could say that about every quarterback.
Isn't 108th like literally the last pick of the single digit rounds?
It's after I wouldn't take Goff in round 10. I'd take him in round 11 or later. I'm sorry, Thomas, if you could just search for QBs, who's going after Goff? We got Jordan Love. I wonder where Trevor Lawrence is going. He's probably ahead of him. Tyler Shuck, Baker Mayfield.
So we're down to QB 19 now.
Kyler Murray. Yeah. All right. Well, there aren't that many guys going after him that are safe. Like,
I would guess the five quarterbacks going before him, you wouldn't take in the single digit rounds either. Bo Nix.
Correct.
Stafford.
You know what? If this is ADP, then I might have to change my mind because I actually don't want to go much lower than Goff, Kyler Murray. I don't want Jordan Love to be my starting quarterback.
You won't have to worry about that in our leagues.
Yeah.
Because we will draft unlike the rest of the world. but by ADP, it's like we just kind of have to talk about the quarterbacks, how they compare to the other quarterbacks.
Right.
I agree. But if there were like really good fallback plans later in the draft, then that'd be one thing. But actually, I think I was wrong. I don't really think there aren't. I guess I'm finding myself with 17 quarterbacks that I draft as my QB1 with Goff and Kyler Murray on that list. I wouldn't take Jordan Love as my QB1. I wouldn't
Baker
take
Baker has big upside.
Yeah, maybe Baker, but I wouldn't be thrilled about it.
Like we've talked a lot about Stafford lately. You'd rather have Goff than Stafford?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I would too.
I'd rather have Purdy than both of them. How about you guys?
Yes, but Purdy is being drafted much.
Purdy and Goff, I think, are the two by far best values.
I can see that.
Is this PPR ADP or is this non-PPR ADP, by the way?
Let's see. I don't know.
Because what I was looking at, he was it's about the same. He's going 103rd. That's non-PPR ADP. Okay, that makes a little more sense, I guess. Okay, let's take a break and we'll finish up with Laporta thoughts. And we have four more players after that. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Hotcakes, sausage patty, hash browns, scrambled eggs, biscuit, real butter and syrup. You know how our big breakfast got its name, and you know where your whole family can share one for just $6. McDonald's, limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, Sam Laporta being drafted as tight end 7 right now. And I guess you guys are both, seems like, pretty high on Laporta. Dan?
Yeah, so I think back to some of what led me in the direction of James Cook and George Pickens last year as my two like flat flag players. And one of the things that led me in James Cook's direction, and you could argue, make a similar case for Pickens, was the scheme. I looked at his numbers pre and post. Why am I blanking on his name? Who's the head coach of the Bills right now? Joe Brady. Pre and post Joe Brady getting there. And it was like a totally different player. The offense had been designed around James Cook at running back, both in the passing game and the run game. Obviously, he came out at times because that was the type of player he was. But there was so much more involvement to get him the ball in ways that worked for him. I think the same thing is going to happen for Sam Laporta this year with Drew Petsing coming in as offensive coordinator. Oh, you don't have to look too much further than what happened in Arizona with Trey McBride. I mean, that offense, when you watch, you throw on the All-22 and you watch a full game of the Cardinals, the first read is the tight end so much more often than just about any, actually literally any team you watch besides like Bowers 2 years ago when the Raiders had nothing and they were just funneling targets to him. Like that was an offense designed to get the tight end the ball. Yes, Wilson produced and Marvin Harrison at times produced, but the first read was most often Trey McBride. And I'm not saying the same thing is going to happen in Detroit. They have him on Ross St. Brown, but he's certainly going to get a lot more first read looks than he's had in a damn long time, Sam LaPorta, maybe since that 2023 season when he was the tight end one overall, LaPorta, because that's what he was in 2023. It's been a while since then. The volume's come way down. I was looking at it, and LaPorta went from averaging over 7 targets per game during that 2023 season to dipping below 5 per game in each of the last two seasons. I think that number gets right back up to 7, if not higher, with Betson coming in. We'll see. I mean, it was there in 2023.
I'm taking the under.
Okay. His touchdowns, that's where we're going to see almost definite positive regression after he scored just 3 last season. And he's currently coming off the board just inside the top 100 picks, I think you said. He's outside the top 5 tight ends. I think as far as upside goes at this tight end position, you can't find a player with a lot more upside that's being drafted outside the top 5 than Sam LaPorta.
I just don't see it that way because with St. Brown has taken a step in terms of targets since that 2023 season. He's just the man now. And Jameson Williams just poses too much of a threat, you know, at least to the upside of LaPorta, not to the floor. I just don't see him getting 100 something targets. 7 targets is 119 targets. I do not see that for Sam LaPorta. He was on pace for 93 last year.
So
too big of a jump for me.
I think the Jameson Williams has taken a leap in terms of targets since then.
Oh, St. Brown.
Oh, St. Brown is a real question mark. Like just a year ago, he had 31 fewer targets. He had 141 right. in 2024, 172 in 2025.
All right, maybe. I mean, maybe. Last year, he had a 30.4% target per out run rate, a 31% target share. Maybe that doesn't continue. I don't know. But I don't know. I know the coaching thing and all that, but like Trey McBride wasn't playing with Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jameson Williams. You know, so I
that's not how, like,
no one's saying Trey McBride's go or Sam LaPorta is going to get 10 targets.
Right. We're not saying it's McBride level numbers, but like
they're like 2 tight ends that are going to average 7 targets per game. I just don't.
It's Kyle Pitts and Sam LaPorta.
It's going to depend on your interpretation of what Drew Petzing is as a offensive schemer and play caller and what he can be, because if you believe he can totally rewrite like what we've seen from him, and maybe that is the case, maybe he just was like, oh look, I got Trey McBride, he's a Hall of Famer, I got to design my whole offense around him. I don't think that's the case. He comes from like the Stefanski tree. Like I think it's going to be tight end heavy. That's how they find some quick, easy solutions in this passing game. And so it's not even just quick solutions. Like a lot of the stuff McBride was like in the 10 to 15 yard range. These are like first down solutions that Petzing is drawing up for them.
McBride, I said yesterday, McBride led the position in screen pass targets. He had 25.
Yeah, there's design stuff too as well, right? We're going to get that at LaPorta. We haven't gotten that. So
it'd be crazy to do that when you have Amon-Ra St. Brown on the field, but fair enough.
We'll see.
I think I don't buy into coaching stuff as much as you guys do. I think.
Yeah, you might not.
I'm not saying I'm right. That's just the difference of opinion, I guess, with LaPorta. I do, however, think if he goes 95th, that's fantastic.
Right. Like who has upside in that range?
A little unclear about the back injury and how healthy he is. I would like a little clarity on that. But
it's fair.
Because he's not playing yet. And they're like, there's no timetable for Sam LaPorta.
And I think it's worth noting, too, like the 8 games before he got hurt last year, he was on pace for 93 targets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, getting over 100 is not, wouldn't be a shock at all.
No, but getting 119 would be a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's one, we're kind of picking nits. It's one target per game.
But 93 to 119 is a huge jump.
Well, no, we've already established that he's probably going to be over 100.
I don't know. I mean, I could see him being in the 93 range again. The thing about that first half of the season was Jameson Williams was doing nothing then.
Because Sam LaPorta was healthy.
You could say that, but couldn't you also see a scenario where Sam LaPorta struggles because Jameson Williams having a really good season? Is Jameson Williams a good player? That possibility exists.
Yeah. Possible.
It did but before they hired Drew Petzing.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Okay. Fair. Chris Godwin, Heath. You wrote about him. He's going 93rd overall as wide receiver 40 on Fantasy Pros. Chris Godwin is going in between Michael Wilson and Michael Pittman. And do you like Chris Godwin this year?
you know, I don't really feel like, I think I got less confident in my take on Chris Godwin after looking further into him. Mostly I feel like he perfectly fits the mold of an older wide receiver who showed signs of decline, and we should just believe him. Career low 7.1 yards per target last year. His 40 receiving yards per game was his lowest mark since his rookie season. But then I remembered that in the first seven or however many games he played in 2024, he was averaging almost 20 fantasy points per game. Yeah. So I do think the upside, and there's great target opportunity with Mike Evans. But even when Chris Godwin was maybe quote unquote healthy last year, it was just bad. And I'm a little bit scared about whether we're going to see the big rebound from Baker Mayfield. So no, I'm probably not drafting Chris Godwin.
Okay. Even 93rd. I think people were a little skeptical when I said it, but I was a big, like as of 2 weeks ago, I was the Chris Godwin guy. And then I went back and I watched his tape from late last season and it was awful.
Awful.
Yeah. Not a tape guy, but you don't have to be to see that he just was slow. He was really slow. And then I compared it to a couple years ago when he got off to that great start, Heath, and he was wide receiver 3 per game, 2024, I guess it was. It's just no comparison. The only question I have is he was coming off a major injury, right. A dislocated ankle. I expected him to struggle last year. So what does his bounce back from the injury look like? If he were 27, I'd be more confident. He's 30.
Right.
But when I watched those games, it was the Dolphins game specifically last year, and it was a good game for him because he had a 50-something yard play. But Jalen McMillan looked so much better than him. And to me, that's the value receiver to pick late in drafts. Although I felt Guy Godwin was going to be more like a 7th-round pick. If he's going in the 90s, it's a little bit better.
93rd is exactly where I have him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could get on board with that, I guess, just in case he does rebound because he wasn't healthy last year.
The other thing I would say, though, is like if I have a player 93rd and he goes 93rd, I'm drafting him 0% of the time because there's always somebody that I have ranked higher that's still available. But no, it's possible that he bounces back again. I just worry it's too many leg injuries for a guy who's 30 years old.
That's how I feel. Yeah.
And he's just never going to be him again.
Right. He's right, named now that we remember, but is he still that same athlete?
We got 3 more players to go, and I want everyone to stay to the end. Even if you don't have enough time, forget about the next 3 players we're going to talk about because the email we have at the end of the show is just terrific. Ooh,
we got a good email?
Oh, we got a great email.
Oh, I love a good email.
Subject line was off-season fun at Dan's expense.
Oh, great.
The email is so good that Adam, like I always know the email is better when Adam puts email of the day, but doesn't copy and paste the email.
Yeah, he wants to keep no surprise. Yeah,
right. He doesn't want us prepared.
Yeah,
exactly. You can be prepared, Heath. I don't want Dan to be prepared. God, I want to read this so badly right now. All right, let's talk about Rashad White. Heath, he's now on the Commanders. He's going 118th overall, in between Jonathan Brooks and Jordan Mason. Rashad White.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more likely to draft Rashad White than I was before I wrote his player outlook. By a lot of metrics, he was the best rusher on Tampa Bay last year. He had a career best tackle avoid rate, career best rush success rate. I really feel like since Dan lit a fire under him, he's become a much better runner of the football. We know 99%. He's going to be the passing downs back in Washington. And I just kind of was thinking about like, and it's a different group now, kind of some of them, but what they did with Austin Eckler for a while was like, we all thought he was too old and he wasn't quite as good as he used to be. And he was just really better as a passing downs back, but they trusted him. So they gave him 12 rush attempts a game and threw it to him 5 or 6 times a game. And I'm not sure there's anybody on this roster to prevent Rashad White from being that guy. And he's available in round 10.
Mm-hmm. And let's see where teammates are going.
Do you expect to be able to trust Jaden Daniels to use him in the passing game enough?
He used Austin Eckler, didn't he?
Yeah, that is true. That was Cliff's.
And he doesn't have anyone else to throw to.
Yeah.
Except for Terry.
Did he use Eckler? can't remember. Use him a bit. Not like, obviously not vintage Austin Eckler.
Right. He was vintage Austin Eckler at that point.
Yeah, sorry. I thought I had that in here somewhere with Jaden Daniels. Does he throw to his running backs? I don't think he has a very high running back target rate, but yeah. So Jacory Kroski Merritt is going 126th overall. Rashad White is going, what did I say? I don't know. Why is this not? Oh, he's going 116th. So he's going ahead of Jacory Kroski Merritt in PPR.
I would draft both at that cost.
All right, next player. Oh, these are mine. Kenneth Gainwell. So I wrote the AFC North. And any player that was on the AFC North last year, I wrote the outlook for. So Kenneth Gainwell, who's now on Tampa Bay, and he's the new Rashad White. And Isaiah Likely, who is now on the Giants.
Mm.
I think Gainwell right now, I think, has one of the worst ADPs in. He's going 94th. I wonder if that's just because Bucky Irving is not fully healthy right now. If
probably
the case, fine. If Bucky Irving is ready in training camp, I'm not spending a top 100 pick on Kenneth Gainwell. You know, I could see him. He had 73 catches last year. I think it's not going to happen again. And
right.
But they're going to give Bucky every chance to win the job. And then there's also Sean Tucker. So if Bucky gets hurt or fails, I don't think Kenneth Gainwell is just going to come in and be the lead back. I think Tucker's going to mix in there as well, and he's going to be the short yardage back. So I suspect that Kenneth Gainwell, if he were drafted 94th overall and Bucky Irving were healthy, I think Gainwell would be one of the most dropped players after week one or week two.
I could see that. I'm with you on it. He feels like a wasted draft pick.
I don't have any idea. Like, the entire Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster, really. But I don't have any idea what to make of this running back room because Bucky's rushing efficiency was so bad last year. And I know we blame that on the shoulder and the injury. His receiving efficiency was insane. It was awesome. He was fantastic as a pass catcher, which makes me a little more skeptical that the rushing was all just injury. But I don't know that he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's not healthy still. And if he starts last year, like he finished this year, in terms of rushing efficiency, Kenneth Gainwell may have more carries than we're expecting.
I agree. I just, that's a lot of ifs to take a guy 94th overall when there are other, like Jonathan Brooks is going 20 picks later or something like that. And there are other
people. Right, yeah.
I think Blake Corum is going after that. And we know Blake Corum's going to have carries. I guess my point is, Blake Corum's going in 99th, 100th. Is that there's also the Sean Tucker factor. He's not the clear handcuff, like going to get all the work if something happens to Bucky Irving.
I think Gainwell might have a higher PPR floor than Rashad White, but a much, much lower ceiling.
All right, let me see if I can find my... I'm just going to read my outlook for Isaiah Likely. Here we go. Will this be the year Isaiah Likely breaks out? It's worth the risk in fantasy. Draft Likely as a borderline top 10 option with a mid to late round pick, perhaps sometime around 100th overall. We saw glimpses of Likely's potential with Baltimore in weeks 12 through 18 of 2023. In that stretch, Likely averaged a terrific 13.9 PPR points per game with Mark Andrews sidelined. Now as a big free agent addition for the Giants and with Malik Nabers coming off knee surgery, Likely should see a lot of targets and has a chance to have a major impact. Of course, the Giants intend to be a run-heavy offense, and Nabers could still be ready early in the season. Likely is no slam dunk, but which tight end is without risk in the mid to late rounds? We're hoping this is the season it all comes together for Likely.
Is that the one Dave wrote for you?
No, that was all me. Okay. And
Dave wrote an outlook of yours?
No, I was struggling with my Jalen Warren outlook, so I sent it to him, and he's like, "Can I edit?" And I'm like, "Sure." And he sends it back to me. It's like three sentences longer. It was so good, but very in-depth.
I love it.
I think Likely right now, I put mid to late round pick. He's going 130th. He's going 120th on Draft Sharks. That's pretty much a late round pick, in my opinion. I think if there's buzz, I could see him moving up to like the eighth round or something. I think 130th for Isaiah Likely is terrific.
If Nabers ends up on PUP to start the year, like there's going to be a jump in ADP from someone on the Giants pass catchers. And Likely is probably the most likely, no pun intended, to be that guy.
I would draft him over George Kittle today.
Wow.
Well, Dan, I also wrote the outlook for Calvin Austin the third.
Oh, boy.
But I'm not going to read that one.
That wasn't one of the until Calvin Austin finds meaningful playing time.
Yeah. You know, it should have been, but I did think about Malik Nabers. If Malik Nabers is out, maybe he's a sleeper in deep leagues.
Dan, I think, has to probably read a lot of these. And I always have this anxiety of like, did I write that about a guy that I should have written more words about? But it feels like there's like 10 of those per team that it's just like, we have to put something for this guy. And there's like a 0.1% chance he matters.
I think I'm good with it as long as the rookies, I think, all deserve it. Their own write-up just for the dynasty. Two people who play dynasty.
Yeah. I hope you read my my.
I read all of it. I read every single one. Which one do you want me to read that you're excited about?
What about the Browns kicker?
Okay, interesting. You got some interesting Azer stats on that.
His last name is Szmyt.
Did you start with Smith Happens?
No, I said he's not ranked as a starting option among kickers. Does not need to be drafted. If you do end up rostering him, here is a helpful hint. His last name is pronounced like Schmidt. You're welcome.
I like it. I don't know if we'll keep it, but I like it.
Oh, come on, man.
Like, I want to keep that, but that's something that probably goes above my head as far as that. I think we can keep that. I think we'd have some fun in it.
Three people are going to read that, Andre.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
Especially the last sentence of it. All right.
That's the best part.
So we got an email of the day. It's from Josh. And he says, Adam, one of my favorite offseason hobbies is watching you and Dan banter, all while Dan is clearly George Costanza reincarnate. I've taken the liberty of providing a 6-episode set to prove that point based on mostly real life situations. Take and enjoy and feel free to share on the podcast on a slow news day. So I only have three. I'm only going to do three. I don't want to read all six, but Dan Costanza, the lost episodes. We have a graphic here.
The golden rule. I do believe in the golden rule.
Episode 1 is At the Movies. Episode 2 is Strong Armed. Episode 3 is Smedium. Episode 4 is Golf Disaster. Episode 5 is The Match Part 3. And episode 6, finale, The Golden Rule. I'll read the first one. At the
Movies. Oh my God. Did Thomas AI my face onto Costanza there?
Yeah. And he said it was pretty seamless.
I didn't even notice. I was going to say.
Oh my God.
You can't run away from this, man. You are him. Number 1, At the Movies. Adam sets Dan up on a blind date, and for once, everything is going perfectly. Great conversation, great chemistry, and even plans for a second date. Then she asks a simple question. What's your favorite movie? What follows is a horrifying revelation. Dan has not seen most of the movies any functioning adult is expected to have seen. As he desperately tries to explain why he's never watched classics everyone else loves, his date becomes increasingly alarmed. Quote, a major red flag.
Dan
launches the campaign to become cultured overnight, speed running movie history and pretending he's seen films he can't even summarize. Lies pile up until he's trapped discussing movies with a group of self-proclaimed cinephiles.
This is so good. I don't think you could beat that one. That one was literally perfect. Perfectly written.
Episode 2. I think episode 3 is my favorite. Episode 2 is Strong Armed. Dan's biggest travel pet peeve strikes again. The second the plane lands, a passenger jumps into the aisle and starts cutting ahead of everyone. Dan sees him coming and instinctively extends his arm across the empty seat beside him, creating a human barricade.
Yep.
Silent battle of wills ensues. No words are exchanged, but neither man backs down. Weeks later, karma arrives. Running late for a connection, Dan becomes the exact person he hates. Desperate to make his flight, he starts moving up the aisle before it's his turn, only to be stopped by another passenger employing the same move. Man loudly calls Dan, quote, the scum of the earth, as the entire plane nods in agreement. Yeah. Spends the rest of the flight insisting the situations are completely different.
Yeah. This is perfect. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's great. All right, here's number 3, Smedium. After years of being accused of wearing shirts that are obviously too small, Dan finally snaps, they are larges. Nobody believes him. Determined to prove everyone wrong, Dan discovers a loophole. He'll wear his shirts inside out so the size tag is visible. Now everyone can see they're actually larges. Unfortunately, nobody is paying attention to the tag because they're too distracted by the grown man walking around with his shirt inside out. Dan becomes known as, quote, the inside out guy, a reputation that somehow feels worse than being known as the guy who wears mediums.
Oh, my God. Bravo. Fantastic. Unbelievable. Save the other three for another episode. These are unbelievable. And please write more.
Should have had him write the outlooks.
These might be. I'll put these in the. I'll run these by Archie. These might be our outlooks.
Phenomenal stuff. Thank you, Josh, for
that is unreal. Josh, you're unreal.
Yeah, it's really great.
How did you do that?
Oh, man. And spoiler alert, in episode 5, the match part 3, I beat you in tennis.
Well, then everything's ruined. I mean, it's just not. It's just we lost everything. We lost the plot.
Have a great day, everybody. We're going to talk to you. Have a great weekend, too. Talk to you on Monday. Fantasy Football Today. See ya.
Podcasts. This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.